It's November 26th, 2022. Oh, it's 10:00 hours. That was not on purpose. I meant to show you yesterday, but I mean, the timing was not on purpose. I tried to show you my gators, but I wasn't using the correct monitor, so I wasn't actually on cam as far as the video went, but there it is. These are the gaiters, the way they're strapped to my shoe. It hooks underneath the heel of my boot, holds it on, and then it tightens up around my, just under my knee. It has a cinch. It tightens and clicks or snaps in place to hold it under my knee. And that keeps, when I'm outside, if I'm working in deep snow, it keeps all the snow out of my boots. Keeps all the snow off my legs. It keeps me dry. I think they're Gore-Tex too. These gaiters that I have are Gore-Tex. But I mean, they should be Gore-Tex. It's a good thing to keep them, you know, from getting wet underneath, to keep the water from soaking through. But they keep my legs warmer and drier, and just, I mean, completely dry, but warmer also. So indoors, they're great to keep the drafts off my legs. It keeps my legs warmer. And I never thought to wear them indoors, but now I'm wearing them right today with my Merrells again, like I did yesterday. I've got some soup that I'm heating up. I'm cooking some potatoes I'm adding potatoes to the final bit of chili that's there. A little tiny bit of chili that I had left. But first of all, I added one small onion to the tiny bit of chili, and I put some water with it. And it was my own chili, but it was mixed from partly from a can of chili. And I add tomatoes to it, and I can add onions too, but I generally add corn or peas and also tomatoes, and makes the chili. It's the tomatoes that's the key to making the chili better than it was out of the can. The tomatoes are the key. But then I can add garlic too if I want, I guess, but I don't usually, because I usually put the garlic in the potato soup at the beginning, like I'm doing now. I added garlic and potatoes to the onion that was there with the chili. But I had a little bit of the onion soup with the chili yesterday, and it was phenomenal. I mean, just onion chili soup, whatever that means. But I mean, it's just a simple soup. It has, you know, not a whole lot of flavor, but it's great to have the onions, especially in the colder, you know, winter weather. There's something great about onions, like tomatoes. Tomatoes are a very I shouldn't say very well known, but to me they're well known because in one of Anne's gardening books, I read about canning tomatoes and how it's great to can tomatoes because in the winter, tomatoes can be your only source of nutrition. For people who live in England, for example, he was an English gardener, this person, I believe, who wrote the book that Anne had. I still have the book, too, I think. I mean, I'm sure I do. It's not gone anywhere that I know of. But I don't know where it is right now. Illustrated, what's that? Cookbook. But that's not it. It's a book. It's somewhere else. It's somewhere else in the house. I've got to go check the soup. I'll be right back. Soup is going to be good. Well, the thing is, I added what I always put when I make potato soup, at least these days. I'm always, you don't have to. I didn't put a bay leaf. I need to put a bay leaf, so I'll go and do that right now. But I always add chicken stock. I make potato soup from chicken stock, and it's the best soup. It just adds a whole nother universe, not just a layer, but a universe of flavor when you put the chicken stock in, and then you can put a bay leaf. You need a bay leaf with potatoes usually, but when you're done cooking it, when you want to eat it after it's warm, really, if it gets too hot, especially if it gets too hot, take it up in the bowl, but leave space for a tiny bit of cream, and just pour a bit of cream into it, and it's phenomenal that way. I mean, it cools it down a little bit, makes it more easier to eat. not more palatable. Well, yeah, it makes it more palatable too to have the cream with the potatoes and the, it's phenomenal. It's fantastic. But you don't need the cream either. It's just that it's better to have calcium. And I mean, we know this, right? But I mean, it's just better. But it tastes better. It, everything is better. Bay leaf. A bay leaf. Perfect. A bay leaf. It's too hot. The lid is too hot. Yeah. Here, I just had to get that bay leaf. I had to get it. I just had to get that bay leaf submerged, and so but the lid of the pot is so hot because it was boiling really vigorously, and it got very hot on. So I needed to get the pot holder. That's all, or the oven mitt, I guess you call it. I could use a pot holder. I just don't have any handy at the moment. But the oven mitts are what I always use when the pot gets too hot. But you could use any. You can use. I can even. I sometimes use a Kleenex even. Anything to give me a little bit of insulation between the metal lid. It's because it's a metal knob on the pot. It's made of steel, stainless steel, and so it gets too hot. If it were plastic, it would be much easier. If it were, you know, phenolic or whatever they make them out of, these oven-safe plastics or whatever, which I have some lids, you know, like that, but not for this size of pot. I've got the one size of the one type of lid for this. I think it's a 3-quart pot. Is it 3 quarts? I'm trying to think. These smaller pots. How big is the Dutch oven? I think it's 5 quarts. This smaller one might only be 2 quarts. Actually, it's more like 2 quarts or 1 or 2 quarts. I'm guessing. What am I thinking? If I poured a liter of milk in there, would it fill it up? Yeah, it's sort of 1 or 2 quarts, I think. That's the pot I'm using to make all of my meals, of the meals that I cook on the stove, I mean. That's not even true either, because I use the frying pan all the time. To the director on The Silent Dove. To the director on The Silent Dove? What's that mean? It's interesting. To the director on The Silent Dove Among Those Far Away, of David Mictam, when the Philistines laid hold of him in Gath. Jehovah, and little children, let's pray. Jehovah, we want to be humble. We hopefully will remain humble, Jehovah, in your sight as we do our study today, and we pray for the blessings that only you can give us. And help us also, Father, to love even our enemies, but to love our neighbors and everyone around us and everyone in the universe, that we would love them all. In Jesus' name, amen. I mean, this is the Psalm 56 now. We're on the 26th of November. Show me favor, O God, because mortal man has snapped at me, warring all day long. He keeps oppressing me. My foes have kept snapping all day long. For there are many warring against me high-mindedly. Whatever day I get afraid, I, for my part, shall trust even in you. In union with God, I shall praise his word. In God I have put my trust. I shall not be afraid. What can flesh do to me? All day long they keep hurting my personal affairs. All their thoughts are against me for bad. They attack, they conceal themselves. They, for their part, keep observing my very steps while they have waited for my soul. On account of their hurtfulness, cast them forth. In anger, bring them down. Bring down even the peoples, O God. My being a fugitive, you yourself have reported. Do put my tears in your skin bottle. Are they not in your book? At that time my enemies will turn back. On the day that I call, this I well know, that God is for me. In union with God, I shall praise his word. In union with Jehovah, I shall praise his word. In God I have put my trust, I shall not be afraid. What can earthling man do to me? Upon me, O God, there are vows to you. I shall render expressions of thanksgiving to you, for you have delivered my soul from death. Have you not delivered my feet from stumbling? That I may walk about before God in the light of those alive. One of the most beautiful passages of Scripture, Psalm 56, that I may walk about before God in the light of those alive. Unbelievably beautiful language. To my mind, honestly, that's what I thought. I mean, from the very first time I saw that. And by the way, it occurred to me that, you know, in reading 1 John, the letter of 1 John yesterday, that, and also today in reading this psalm, of course, it seems to correlate. This correlates where David's talking about God, in union with God. That's what John talked about, the union with God, being in union with God is what John was talking about. Verse 4 of Psalms here, 56, 4, in union with God, I shall praise his word. And John was talking about that same thing, being in union with God in that book of John. And I had no knowledge that was going to happen, that the correlation existed was not in my conscious mind. It was not a conscious knowledge. I probably had subconscious knowledge of it. I don't doubt that. Undoubtedly I did, but because it correlates so well. But when I was looking at 1 John, I wanted to know, suddenly thought last night or this morning, after I woke up, to whom did John write that letter? And I wanted to look it up, but I didn't have my New World Translation with me in the bed. I had the King James, the New Revised King James, I think it is. It's a leather-bound Bible. It's very beautifully bound, that particular Bible. But it's not, you know, it's not exactly the same as the New World Translation, but it says basically the same thing anyway. So I opened it up to 1 John, and I noticed, of course, John starts his letter with this in the same way that he started his book. That's one of the reasons we know it's from John, too. He starts it in the very same way that he starts the book of John. He's talking about the life that was with God, that was Jesus Christ, who was with God in the beginning. Like he talks about, let's look at that again, just momentarily before we go on to Isaiah here. 1 John 1, it says, that which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have viewed attentively, concerning the word of life, yes, the life was manifest, right? But it was with the Father. He goes on in verse 2, right? It was manifest, but it was with the Father, which was with the Father and was made manifest to us. So he's talking about the same idea of Jesus coming to the earth from heaven, from having been with the Father as the co-creator. He was the one through whom Jehovah created all things, but he was also the first creation of God alone, the only begotten Son of Jehovah alone. This spirit creature who came to earth and came to be called Jesus Christ, but he was before that in heaven. Now Isaiah, let's see what we can find here. This might be very interesting too. I never know what's going to come up. Oh my goodness, this is wonderful. We're talking about now, this is the part about, it's not got anything to do with what we've been reading just now, but we're talking about just now, but it has to do with King Hezekiah, whom we talked about before, whom I was talking about with regard to the dating of Isaiah 20, where Tartan was sent by Sargon. And this time period here is very likely the same dating as the king of Assyria named Sargon, when he was king. This is very likely the same time period when Hezekiah was in his 14th year. But Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, came up. he was the leader of the military force at the time he came up, but whether he was actually king at that time is not necessarily the case. And that we see from many other examples in modern and ancient history, including the time of the presidents of the United States, when we talk about President Jimmy Carter. He's not president now, but it's perfectly acceptable to call him the president of the United States, even now. As long as it's clear that we're not saying he's the current president, it's still true that he's known as the president of the United States. And if we talked about President Jimmy Carter when he was 5 years old, we could still call him President Carter, even though he was 5 years old, because he later on became president. So it's that sort of thing which we know about, which can also be true here whenever we read things like this in Scripture. So Sennacherib came up. Now, normally the king would not come up and fight, right? Or not always would a king want to risk his own life and go to war. So it would not be abnormal to send someone else or to appoint someone else as the leader of the military force. Plus, not only that, but many of these kings might have been too old, not age. It's not about age, but I mean, they might have been too physically infirm, too weak or sick or whatever you want to call it, old in the sense of being worn out physically, too. In a state of ill health to the extent that they needed to send someone else. So it's not always, going to be a king who marches in front of his own armies. Partly because they get older and they can't do it anymore, but in some cases that's not a problem either. Depending on the climate in which they live too. That could be a factor, because certain climates allow people to live longer and healthier. And I think Egypt is an example of that, because it's warmer, drier. Things about the climate in Egypt may allow a person to live longer, but it's also genetic, of course. But what I'm talking about, vitality. We know Moses lived to be 120, and he was from Egypt. So, I mean, we're talking about, can a man be vigorous in energy until the age of, 60 or 70 or 100, 120? Moses was very able-bodied until he was 120 years old. Now, it came about in the 14th year of King Hezekiah that Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, came up against all the fortified cities of Judah and proceeded to seize them. And the king of Assyria finally sent Rabshakeh from Lachish to Jerusalem to King Hezekiah with a heavy military force. One thing I noticed, I looked up the word ignoble. It's ignoble. It's not ignoble. The word is pronounced ignoble. I never realized that all my life. I've known that word all my life, but never knew it was pronounced ignoble. According to the dictionary that I have right now, anyway, which is the Oxford American, I think it is. Ignoble. The stress is on the first syllable. Ignoble. And the king of Assyria finally sent Rabshakeh from Lachish to Jerusalem to King Hezekiah with a heavy... I can't read that. And the king of Assyria finally sent Rabshakeh from Lachish to Jerusalem to King Hezekiah with a heavy military force. And he proceeded to stand still by the conduit of the upper pool at the highway of the laundryman's field. Then there came out to him Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, and Shebna the secretary, and Joah, the son of Asaph the recorder. Accordingly, Rabshakeh said to them, "Please say to Hezekiah, this is what the great king, the king of Assyria, has said. What is this confidence in which you have trusted? You have said, but it is the word of lips. There are counsel and mightiness for the war. Now, in whom have you put trust that you have rebelled against me? Look, you have trusted in the support of this crushed reed. In Egypt, which if a man should brace himself upon it, would certainly enter into his palm and pierce it. That is the way Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, is to all those putting their trust in him. And in case you should say to me, it is Jehovah our God, in whom we have trusted, is he not the one whose high places and whose altars Hezekiah has removed, while he says to Judah and Jerusalem, before this altar you should bow down? Now then, make a wager, please, with my lord the king of Assyria. And let me give you 2,000 horses to see whether you are able on your part to put riders upon them. How then could you turn back the face of one governor of the smallest servants of my lord, while you for your part put your trust in Egypt for chariots and for horsemen? And now is it without authorization from Jehovah that I have come up against this land to bring it to ruin? Jehovah himself said to me, go up against this land, and you must bring it to ruin. At this, Eliakim and Shebna and Joah said to Rabshakeh, speak, please, to your servants in the Syrian language, for we are listening, and do not speak to us in the Jews' language, in the ears of the people that are on the wall. But Rabshakeh said, is it to your lord and to you that my lord has sent me to speak these words? Is it not to the men sitting upon the wall that they may eat their own excrement and drink their own urine with you men? And Rabshakeh continued to stand and call out in a loud voice in the Jews' language. And he went on to say, hear the words of the king of Assyria. This is what the king has said. Do not let Hezekiah deceive you people, for he is not able to deliver you. And do not let Hezekiah cause you to trust in Jehovah, saying, without fail, Jehovah will deliver us. This city will not be given into the hand of the king of Assyria. Do not listen to Hezekiah, for this is what the king of Assyria has said. Make a capitulation to me and come out to me and eat each one from his own vine and each one from his own fig tree. And drink each one the water of his own cistern until I come and actually take you to a land like your own land, a land of grain and new wine, a land of bread and vineyards, in order that Hezekiah may not allure you, saying, Jehovah himself will deliver us. Have the gods of the nations delivered each one his own land out of the hand of the king of Assyria? Where are the gods of Hamath and Arpad? Where are the gods of Sepharvaim? Have they delivered Samaria out of my hand? Who are there among all the gods of these lands that have delivered their land out of my hand so that Jehovah should deliver Jerusalem out of my hand? And they continued to keep silent and did not answer him a word, for the commandment of the king was saying, you must not answer him. But Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, and Shebna, the secretary, and Joah, the son of Asaph, the recorder, came to Hezekiah with their garments ripped apart and told him the words of Rabshakeh. So that came out of nowhere. In Isaiah, the book of Isaiah, we've been reading pronouncements against Babylon, pronouncements against Moab. And other places too, including a pronouncement against all the nations, a pronouncement against Damascus, we saw, which is Syria, of course. Damascus is the main city in Syria, typically. That's how it's thought of, anyway. And we read the pronouncement against Egypt. I was going to say that, but I wasn't sure until I checked. The pronouncements against the wilderness of the sea, we read that. So there were a lot of pronouncements. The pronouncement against the Valley of the Vision. The pronouncement against the Valley of the Vision. Chapter 22 of Isaiah. The pronouncement of Tyre. There was a pronouncement against Tyre here. not just of Tyre. But in verse 8, against Tyre, 23 and 8, so it's against Tyre. And 24, well, but anyway, all of these pronouncements against different nations, and then the pronouncement against the drunkards of Ephraim, chapter 28, I should say, of Isaiah. And woe to Ariel, that's talking about Jerusalem, it appears. Woe to the stubborn sons. All these pronouncements against different places. Woe to those going down to Egypt for assistance. You know, all these pronouncements. And then we finally, all of a sudden, well, verse 35 talks about rage against all the nations, including Edom, in verse 5 of 34, chapter 34, 5. And then we also had this wonderful prophecy of Isaiah 35, the wilderness will exult, and, you know, the blind will be seeing again, and the deaf will hear again, and the lame will climb up like a stag does. In other words, climb the mountains, you know, even though they were lame previously. The tongue of the speechless one will cry out in gladness. All these great things, and no resident will say, I am sick. Is that here too? Or is that somewhere else? That's somewhere else, I think, yeah. That's, I believe, I just seem to think that's 32 of Isaiah, which is another marvelous one. I think it does say that here, doesn't it? Maybe not. Okay. We'll Google that to find out where that is, but look at this. I love 32 of Isaiah, where it says each one of these princes in verse 2 would be like the shadow of a heavy crag in an exhausted land, a shelter from the sun, in other words. The shadow. I mean, the shade, you know, the shadow of a heavy crag in an exhausted land is a... And also, of course, a hiding place from the wind, a place of concealment from the rainstorm, and like streams of water in a waterless country. These princes would be like that, like the shadow of a heavy crag in an exhausted land. Such a powerful illustration. I love that illustration so much. It's so perfect. But it's not like I'm not feeling it's perfect because of what I think. I never would have thought of that on my own at all. That never came to me except through reading this scripture, like the shadow of a heavy crag in an exhausted land. It's only Jehovah who has revealed that to me, because I never saw that before I saw it in the Word, in Jehovah's Word, here in Isaiah chapter 32. Now, where does it say? I'm pretty sure that it's in 32 that it says no resident will say, I'm sick, isn't it? No, evidently no. Okay, it's 33. Oh, it's 33, I believe now. I believe it's in Isaiah 33:24. Is that true? Yes, 33 and 24. So that's not why I thought it was 32, but maybe 3:32:4, maybe. But 33:24, and no resident will say, I am sick. Right, I knew it was somewhere in this area, but at least I believed strongly that it was. But then after all that, which is, we come unexpectedly to the 14th year of Hezekiah, comes out of the blue in Isaiah. He suddenly starts talking about Assyria, you know, under the guidance of Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, coming and invading. And King Hezekiah, in the 14th year of King Hezekiah, but King Hezekiah being the king in Jerusalem at the time, and so King Hezekiah had to deal with this issue about the king of Assyria invading, coming right up to Jerusalem, standing outside the wall of Jerusalem. And it even talks about the laundryman's field, by the conduit of the upper pool at the highway of the laundryman's field. Gives us a vivid illustration of what the city was like from the standpoint of the laundryman, even. whoever the laundryman was. I guess the laundryman was where they washed their clothing for the city because they had the big water there, the pool, the upper pool at the highway of the laundryman's field. It sounds like the city laundry place where they brought their laundry. That's what it sounds like. You know what? I think the soup is ready. I think it's going to be good, too. Let's see if it's ready. Oh, yeah, I think so. The potato's a little undercooked. Yeah. I think. It's hot. Very hot. But what happens is the chili, you see, I'm gonna keep heating that soup a little bit longer, I think. But the thing is, the chili, I'm not boiling it. It's just simmering, but it will boil once the potato is entirely cooked. It will start to boil. So I have to keep an eye on it. I don't want it to boil all the way or anything, but it'll be okay. But the thing is, the truth of the matter, when you're making soup from a little bit of chili, it adds stock to it. So even if you didn't have chicken stock, the potato soup would be much better because it had the chili in it. And I can put cream in this right now. I think I will. But, oh, it's so delicious. Now, mind you, keep in mind, this is a soup. It's cooked. And cooked food is never as good, or never as healthy as raw food. Cooked food, when my wife and I switched to raw food, back when Ann was with us, we had we had energy all the time. It seems to me, anyway, I can't speak for her, but for myself, when I went back to eating cooked food, I mean, Ann went back to eating cooked food too, but when I went back to eating cooked food, I was much more drowsy all the time. It makes you sleepy. Eating cooked food makes you sleepy, so you have less energy or less. You're less awake. It's eating dead food. When you're eating cooked food, it's dead. It doesn't have the live enzymes. So you can add enzymes to your food too, but you can buy enzymes and add them. But that's, you know, you don't cook them. The idea is it's better not to cook the food because then you don't need to add enzymes or you don't have to have that problem. You need raw food for the reason that you need the enzymes. And it's probably not just enzymes. It's other things that are in live food that's not been cooked. There are other things there that are the component of living food that you need in your body, different components of living food, of fresh food. So it's the difference between dead food and fresh food, really. Fresh is living, and cooked is dead. It's a lot of dead things in that, a lot of dead components, and including microbes, too. You need the microbes that are in the food. Like if you eat salad, there's a lot of... Oh, that was so good. I added the heavy cream. It was like 18%. Oh, I just happened to have one open because I just switched over from 10% cream to 18 because that's the one that the carton that's open right now, the 18%. It's kind of like table cream. That's what I make my lattes with. That's why it's open right now. But this is how I eat. I always have a liter of cream open. And I'll always add it to my soup if I want some. Or I'll use it to make my lattes. No, you know what? That potato's perfectly cooked. I'm going to go turn that off. It's just perfect. I learned my lesson about food poisoning. The other day, the past few days, the past little while, where I had the big problem. No, actually, it wasn't a big problem. But I took a lot of vitamin C because I thought it was going to be a big problem. And then the vitamin C proved that it probably was a big problem, but had a very slight sore throat. That's all it was. But I think it was because I was reheating the soup, or reheating the stew, whatever you want to call it. It was a bean dish. It wasn't soup. If it had been soup, it would have been fine because there's so much water in soup. It always gets hot very quickly, but the stew, I was reheating it on a very high heat setting, but I wasn't letting it get totally hot because I wanted to eat it before it got too hot to eat. And I was eating it like and reheating it all the time, but I wasn't putting it in the fridge. You need to boil and cook and stew these things and really cook them. Unless you put it in the fridge. And even then, it's a good idea to cook it well. To heat it well once it's cooked. But I had a very slight sore throat, but since I don't normally have a sore throat, you have to think, when you get a sore throat, you must be coming down with something, because unless it's allergies, which it, in this case I didn't believe it was, because allergy season had sort of gone. Speaking of which, my allergies are much better this year. Way better. So, I'll talk about that another time. But, I mean, that's so many good things to talk about. I can't even talk about the allergies being so great. But this food poisoning, I mean, when you get sick with a slight sore throat, you know you're coming down with something, right? So, it felt like strep throat. That's what it felt like. I know what that's like. I really believed I was getting strep throat, but it was very early in the stage of the illness. So I started taking vitamin C, and I took 24 grams of vitamin C the first day in the form of chewable. And then I took 36 grams of ascorbate the second day, mixing it with water. There's no pepper in this. This is what my throat does with pepper too, but it's not caused by the pepper. What causes my throat to get tickly when I'm having potato soup? I don't know. Or it might be the chili. I feel fine, but I have a tickle in the throat, you know. I feel great, actually, but I mean really good. And it's really tasty. There's something in it. It's like pepper, but I didn't add pepper. I don't know what it is. There's something in it that irritates the throat. Excuse me. Wow. But that will pass. That feel in the throat, I believe. That's just a tickle. It's more than a tickle because it makes me cough, but it's not anything, not even close to anything like having a sore throat. It's nothing like that. Now I'm very hot, so I'm gonna try to undo some things to cool off a bit here. I don't overheat with the soup, but I want to clean this bowl before it gets more difficult to clean. It's very easy right now, but it'll be very much more difficult later on here. Just got to scrub it with a Kleenex, give it the once over, and three times, five times over, whatever, with round and round we go with the Kleenex. See, my throat will... Now I got to get something to drink to put my throat right. That was. I mean, it's so good. It tastes so good. Got to throw this Kleenex somewhere else in a different garbage. I'll put this stuff out. So, I think I'll get some water. It was great too. Yeah, see, my throat's calming down now. It was just... There's something in the soup, right? It wasn't the cream that does that. So I added some spice. I put Italian spice and some thyme to the soup and some garlic. It could be the garlic. I don't know. Something. Yeah, it could be... It could be the garlic has not yet been cooked long enough or something. I don't know. Whatever. Something sort of burning. It's something like burning my throat. It's... But just, it feels like a tickle. It's a slight burning of, you know, like pepper. Also, pepper does that too. Whenever I have pepper, if I add pepper to my soup, which I don't do anymore because I read somewhere that it's inflammatory or something, it's not good to eat pepper. And I had some inflammation at the time that I read that, so I thought I shouldn't eat pepper. From then on, I haven't eaten pepper. Not that there's anything necessarily wrong with pepper. I think it's just... I think pepper is just not necessary, and it's not necessarily good for us either. I think, on the contrary, some people think pepper is bad for us, and I read that somewhere, and I was convinced, so I stopped eating pepper. But if I can find out from somewhere else that pepper is good, I can start eating it again if I get convinced. But I don't need pepper, so I just eliminated pepper in case it is causing me some harm. So salt is all. I need salt. And I believe in salt being a very important part of our diet, and I use Himalayan salt, which is the best salt. And the best Himalayan is white salt, I believe, but we never get the white Himalayan. Because it's too good, I guess. They won't sell that. They sell the pink, but it's still good. It's rock salt. It's natural rock salt that was in the ocean that became part of the Himalayan mountains when the earth was heaved up, thrust up. And if we look in Psalms, let's look something up. Valley Plains. I think this is it here. Mountains proceeded to ascend, Psalm 104 and 8. See, it talks about, this is talking about, in my mind, this refers to the Himalayan mountains as one example of this, where the ocean floor became thrust up into the mountain range of the Himalayas. That's why we have rock salt in the Himalayan mountains in Pakistan, and that's where we get our Himalayan salt from. In these huge bodies of salt that are occluded in the earth, or you know, they're buried in the ground, because it was originally the ocean floor that was thrust up into these huge mountains that we call the Himalayas. Valley plains proceeded to descend, but also in verse 8, mountains proceeded to ascend. God made the mountains rise up. And that's why that's why these oceans have a boundary in verse 9. Because in verse 6 he was talking about the watery deep. The watery deep was a garment that he put upon the earth. Jehovah founded the earth in verse 5, and with the watery deep he covered it like a garment. The waters were standing above the very mountains. This is talking about possibly, very possibly, this is the deluge. the flood of Noah's day, the waters were standing above the very mountains. But in those days when the deluge occurred, something else happened. And the mountains proceeded to ascend. So the earth was thrust up in some great upheaval at some point in time, because that's how the Himalayas got their salt. It was from an ocean. How else do you explain it? The ocean was thrust up into these mountain ranges, and in the mountains we find the salt, which is from the ocean floor. The evaporated water of the ocean became salt. And it was at some point, it was thrust up in the air. The question is, when did the water evaporate? That's one question. The water must have been an ancient sea, an ancient body of salt water that was evaporated first and then thrust up, it sounds like. But but it's a very fascinating field of study, or science, or a study of geology, you know, that we can, it makes me fascinated to know more. But you know, the thing is, I've never learned as much about anything as when I started to believe in Jesus Christ. That's when I started to want to know everything in harmony with that. I wanted to know everything about all of nature and history, though, as well. All about his, all that I could learn, everything about everything that was possible, that it was possible to learn. I wanted to know everything that was possible to learn, or that it was possible to learn about everything, including history. And I could only do that when I believed in Jesus Christ. I couldn't do that otherwise, because I didn't have any way to stay on the path of what was going to be right, correct, righteous, true, right or true or correct. Right? I didn't. There was no way to know if you were wandering too far off of, away from what was true, or to, if I was wandering too far off of the correct path of what was right and true, and what really happened. How do we know what really happened when these mountains were thrust up and the salt water ended up being salt? I mean, how do we know what happened if we didn't have Jesus or the Bible or Jehovah or anything? If we didn't have anything to guide us and keep us on the right path, like God's word here. It tells us things that we can use to keep us on path when we're studying these things. Verse 9, a boundary you set beyond which they should not pass. The oceans were given boundaries, and they were the continents, right? The shorelines of the continents became the boundaries of the oceans at some point in time. And when these mountains were thrust up, of course, the Himalayas, this could have been long before the deluge. It doesn't have to be the deluge, but it's fascinating. It talks about the waters were standing above the very mountains. This could also just be saying the mountains had not been thrust up yet. So the waters were standing above the mountains, and that's how the salt got to be present, was because there was a body of water there, salt water. Those waters were standing above the mountains in the sense that that land that was under the ocean later on was thrust up, as it says here right in verse 7, at Jehovah's rebuke, these waters fled away because mountains proceeded to ascend. But it's more than that. And there was salt. Okay, there was salt at the bottom of this ocean. That's what it was. There was salt at the bottom of the ocean. It doesn't mean the ocean had evaporated. It just means that the salt water, the body of salt water, had salt at the bottom of it as well, because it was super saturated, I guess. There was more than enough salt, right? So there was salt at the bottom of this ocean. It could have been evaporated, but but there could have been salt at the bottom of it. So when the waters, I mean, all this understanding is only being gotten because I'm reading this. Right, so this, the Bible's a guideline for studying everything, including geology and everything else. It talks about that fascinating things here that we could we could interpret it many different ways, and none of them are wrong, as long as we stick to what it says here. That's the thing. We just need to stick to what it says and keep on learning more about what it means, because we don't know what it means exactly. But it means many different things, some of which are simple, and other things of which might be quite complex and quite scientifically important, too. It's really something to read the Holy Scriptures, what we call the Holy Scriptures, which are Jehovah's Word. All of them, they're part of Jehovah's Word. They're part of Jehovah's Word, the Bible. Because I remember that phrasing, the Valley Plains. That's why I was able to find that. Okay, so, and you know, being able to remember and find things when you want to is very important in studying the Bible. It's important to be able to remember it's important to be able to think of something and then be able to find out immediately, find where it is and read it. It's very important to be able to do that. Let me try something here. Let's try my... Yep. Well, my other translation works. It's fine. My old program, the DOSBox. There it is. The DOSBox program. It's working. I'm running it right now, and now I'm going to quit this game. It's not a game, but it's a program. I'm going to quit the program. There it is. I'm quitting it. And it closed, but it works. It ran. I just can't show it here on the screen because it won't start correctly on this screen. If I bring it over here, it will look wrong because this laptop monitor that you, this is what you're looking at right now. This display here. It uses a different architecture, technical architecture of the computer. The way that the signals are processed is different, or the way that the graphics are utilized or displayed or configured. It's configured differently on this display from the other displays that I have. So I can't use the DOSBox program. I can use it on this screen, but I have to start it up in a different format. Like I have to start. I have more than one version of it, and I have to start the other version of it, or it won't work. So I'd rather just leave it the way it is. So I'm not showing you that today, but I've shown you that on other day, on another day anyway. I've shown you that. But I mean, that's just my other Bible research program, which is, it's the same translation as this one, which is called the Reference Bible 1984 New World Translation. So this is Ward Green. Are we done? Oh, it's good enough for today. The video's long enough for today. I mean, there's no need to make it longer than it needs to be. But it's quite long as it is, so I'm just trying to think what other updates there are. I might like to go outside and work today, actually, because it's a perfect day for working. I was out walking just now. I went out to put my compost out, and there's no snow on the ground at all. Well, virtually none, anyway, very little. Because it's so warm out today, all the snow is going to go away, I think, by the end of the day. And then we're going to get some more warm weather tomorrow, too, it looks like. We won't have any snow for a while unless we get some more. But we're going to get more, I believe, too, but not necessarily a lot. And then we have low probability of snow in the future, but it's not certain that we're going to get a lot. So it doesn't look like there's any forecast of snow right now, but there's some rain coming. We usually get a lot of precipitation this time of year, so it's not likely we're going to be completely dry it's not likely we're going to be completely able to avoid all the precipitation just because we always get a lot this time of year. Should I have my gum right now? I'm trying to think. No, I think I'm going to have a matcha tea latte because that's my primary nutrition of all, everything I eat is primarily, the latte is my chlorophyll. You know, it's got all the phenomenal phytonutrients that are plant nutrients. They're so essential. It's raw. It's raw tea that you just eat. That's what matcha tea is. If you've not tried matcha tea, it is expensive, but you can get, for lattes, you can use a less expensive form of it also. But it is fairly expensive, but I've ordered some now of the, I've got some, it's apparently been shipped. It just hasn't yet, I haven't seen it yet. So I guess it may have arrived, but I haven't checked my location where they deliver. So, I mean, my door. But, I mean, I haven't yet gone to the door today to see. I don't usually go to the door unless they tell me it's been delivered, but I probably should check it because I know it's been shipped. But I've ordered some more matcha tea latte. Not latte, it's just tea. It's a good quality, probably pretty good. Better than good enough for latte, but if you can buy it by the kilogram, that's the way to buy matcha tea. If you can get it by the kilogram, and if you can get Japanese matcha from by the kilogram from Japan, it doesn't have to be the highest possible grade, but it's going to be sometimes $200 to get a kilogram. That's what I paid, it seems to me. It seems to me that's what I paid per kilogram when I bought it something like 6 years ago. But I still have some of that left, and I'm still using it right now. But the thing is, now I think I can get it. I haven't seen it yet to know how good it is, but I might be able to get it for $100 or so, or a little more than $100 per kilogram, which is phenomenal. I mean, it's you pay. I paid $200 for 240 grams, a quarter of a kilogram. I paid $200 for a quarter of a kilogram. And so if I can pay, you know, $100 for a kilogram, it's eight times cheaper. You know, so I mean, it's very important with matcha tea to save money on it because it's so expensive and it's so good for I believe for everyone probably, but for me, it's so good. I only know about myself that it's changed my health incredibly. As have a lot of other things, including calcium, you know, and vitamin D and magnesium and boron, probably, but I'm not so sure what the boron has done, but I still believe in boron very much also, but and selenium and iodine, and most importantly, vitamin K2 has changed my life, but also glutathione, that's right, and krill oil, the omegas. All these things have changed my life by changing my health in a significant way, so that I'm very, I got to get this blanket picked up off the floor again now. I just dropped it. I got a sudden need to scratch somewhere on my body here. Oh my goodness, I got an itchy spot. Got a scratch. It's very itchy. Okay, so I got to turn the heat on again too because I'm going to get cold here. But, so why was I talking about that? Because I wanted to, yeah, because I mentioned the matcha tea. The matcha tea is one of my huge, huge, huge foods that I eat incessantly. I eat that incessantly. And it doesn't sound like food because it's tea, but it's not tea really. It's really a food because it's matcha tea. You eat it. It's like eating a salad, but it's huge. Its huge benefits are not even close to what a salad is. And a salad, when you eat a good salad, it's probably got more nutrient in it than matcha tea, but I don't eat salad all the time. And I don't know why that is. I guess because I don't need it all the time or something. It's just not. It's probably because it takes too much energy for my body to process all the fiber. To get the nutrient out of the fiber, it takes a lot of energy. So I don't eat salad all the time. it's not the most efficient way to get nutrients into the body, and it uses the body's energy. I believe that's probably why. I'm not sure. It takes a lot of work to make a salad, but if it were beneficial, I would do it. If it were that beneficial, I would do it, and I do love my salad when I do have it. It's fantastic. It's really great. It's one of the best. It's another one of the things. I love my salad. It's phenomenal. When I eat it, it's when I want to have it, it's phenomenal. Incredible. It's so good. It tastes so good. The flavor is fantastic. All the different flavors. But matcha tea now I'm eating without sugar. Everything's without sugar. So I no longer have the sweet matcha tea, which I loved so much. But I still love it just with cream. And with iodine, that sweetens it too if you put iodine in it. The potassium iodide from seaweed in a liquid form that I use is very sweet, and I can add it. Only when I, once a day do I add that, but I add it once a day to my latte. And that sweetens it, but it doesn't sweeten it a lot. But I mean, I could use some sweetener like xylitol, or which is a very healthy sweetener, but it's extremely healthy. I don't know. For one thing, it won't dissolve in the matcha tea properly. And I don't need it to be sweet. I can enjoy the matcha tea just with the cream, or I'm sure I can get used to the taste of the matcha without, you know, even with water by itself. I always add salt. That's right. The salt and the matcha can be used together, Himalayan salt. I always add salt because it gives flavor, and it's salt is absolutely a paragon of health. I mean, it's of a paragon of virtue or something for providing health, because we need salt. People don't realize this. But when you have enough calcium in your body's not going to abuse salt, if you know what I mean. It's not going to use the salt in the wrong way. If you're calcium deficient, your body thinks salt is, you know, it tries to use salt to do everything because there's no calcium. And that's what, then people avoid salt all the time. They say, no, don't eat salt, you know. But they also don't eat calcium. And so what do they have? They've got nothing. No calcium, no sodium, they're dead without any of the crucial elements, metals that they need to provide electrons. Like sodium provides one electron, calcium provides two electrons. So calcium is superior to sodium, is twice as good as sodium for providing electrons. And calcium just has so many properties that sodium can't even approach. And I don't know what they all are even, but I know some of them from the Calcium Factor book, the book by Bob Barefoot and Carl Reich, the Canadian doctor Carl Reich from Calgary. That book, The Calcium Factor, is just phenomenal. What year was it written? Oh, yeah, from the year of that book, I could tell you. That'll tell me when I started taking calcium. The year of the book. The year of that book's publication. I'm having trouble getting it out of the bookshelf because it's horizontally stored in the bookshelf. I have to get it out from underneath some other books. What year was this published? If it's 2000, I think it's the year 2000 or something, but why do I think that? It's got to be earlier than that, doesn't it? What's the date? It doesn't have a date. Wait a minute. Oh, there it is, 2002. It's 2002. Well, that tells you that it's copyright 2002. So that proves, that seems to prove to me anyway. It convinces me, sort of. I'm not totally convinced. But normally they'll always have to say more than 1 year. If it was published earlier, or if it was copywritten earlier, they'd have to give the earlier date as well. They'd say copyright 2001, 2002. If it was copyright in both of those years, they would always give the earliest date of publication as well, because it protects their copyright to give the earliest date. So the fact that it says copyright 2002 suggests to me that, and also it has to say who to whom it's copyright. It says copyright 2002, Robert R. Barefoot. It's his copyright. You have to give the name of the copyright holder and the date and the word copyright. Those things are required to make it valid as a copyright statement, okay? Copyright 2002, Robert Barefoot. That's what it says. Something with all those elements, all three of those elements. But 2002, though, that means that I didn't start taking calcium until 2002 or later. So I remember the Masters in 2003, Mike Weir won for Canada, or not for Canada, but he was from Canada and he won the Masters. And I remember that, watching it on our big flat screen plasma TV. We had one of the early plasmas. It cost us way too much money, but then but we watched it nonstop for like 24 hours straight every day. I mean, if we could have, we would have stayed awake and not slept, because we were watching plasma TV. But anyway, we watched the Masters in 2003. I remember that, and I sort of associate the, I know the plasma was the same television from which I learned about Bob Barefoot. I learned watching late night infomercials on plasma TV is where I learned about coral calcium, and I ended up eventually becoming convinced about trying it because I was sick and I needed to cure my own illness. So I started taking calcium at that point. I'd only ever taken Tums before that for acid indigestion, and acid indigestion was something I knew that Tums could fix because of the calcium in the Tums. So I learned something about neutralizing acid, right? I knew about the ability that calcium could or did possess, and that calcium could help me with regard to the stomach acid. So I started to think maybe my body, maybe that's why I had acid indigestion. And by the way, I never get acid indigestion anymore either because of the calcium I'm eating in my dairy products. But I sometimes, like right now, I'll take right now, that reminds me, I'll take one of my coral calciums. I'm using this particular brand. But any brand that has half as much magnesium as it does have calcium, half as many milligrams of magnesium as it has calcium, that's important. It needs to have magnesium because then it's valid. It's marine. If it says it's marine coral, marine grade, it says, I didn't show you this probably, I probably wasn't showing it correctly before. Marine grade, it says. There it is, marine grade. If it says marine grade, it should also say the magnesium should be half as much. Should be half as much magnesium as calcium. And you see this? Magnesium. It's got calcium in the coral calcium. 225. And then it has 125 milligrams of magnesium. Right? In the form of oxide. But let me read that. The way they wrote that, the magnesium looks like it's coming from magnesium oxide. If this magnesium is from oxide and not from coral, then this is not marine grade. That's why I'm saying it. That's what I'm saying. Marine grade should have. So I mean, if you can get natural marine coral, that's the best. And it's got half as much magnesium in terms of milligrams. It should have half as much, or very close to half as much magnesium. Not less than half. If it's got less than half, then you know it's not marine grade coral. And marine grade is better because it has the magnesium partly, but other minerals too have been depleted from the coral that's not under the ocean. It gets exposed to the weather. If it's above the ocean, it's not marine grade. If it's above the ocean, and therefore it will have weathering and it will lose minerals. It won't be as beneficial because the weather washes all the minerals away. So sometime around 2003, I guess I started taking coral calcium right around 2003 or so, right around the time when that book was published. But I mean, that's amazing to me that I can identify the date now more accurately. That's about 20 years ago that I learned about calcium. And ever since, I've been learning more about vitamins ever since then. And I've learned more. I mean, I thought that was the biggest thing I could ever learn was, and it was a huge thing to learn about calcium, but I didn't realize then that I would learn so many more powerful things about health. And by learning about vitamins, I didn't realize I would change my health completely, like completely change it. It's too hot. I'm going to sweat. I don't want to sweat. I'm gonna now end the video, I think. It's a good time to end. It's Ward Green. It's been a great... it's been a great day so far, but it's been a great opportunity to speak to you again and to study the Word with you. We didn't read any more than Psalms and Isaiah this time, but we'll pick it up some other time with the other books. And November 26th it is, 2022, 11:11 hours! Oh my goodness, it just changed it to 11:12 hours. But it's also 1 hour and 11 minutes. This is Ward Green. I got to end it now while we're on the right numbers. Saying bye for now. I love you.